hers. He closes the door to the tiny bedroom and then puts his hands on my shoulders.
You all right?
I would like to tell him about the Hopi Reservation, where the very ground you are standing on might crumble beneath your feet. I'd like to tell him that an owl can spell out the future. I'd like to explain what it looks like to watch someone fall 20 stories and to see, at the same time, a storm in the shape of her body begin to climb into the sky. I'd like to apologize. But instead, I find myself going to pieces. Eric sits down on the floor of the trailer with me in his arms. He lets me keep all my words to myself.
Dee, he says after a while, will you promise me something?
I draw away, wondering if he, like Sophie, saw what had happened in the car.
What?
He swallows hard.
That I won't wind up like your mother?
My heart cinches. You won't start drinking again, Eric.
I wasn't talking about alcoholism, he says. I was talking about losing you.
Eric kisses me so tenderly that it unravels me. I kiss him back, trying to find the same depth of faith. I kiss him back, although I can still taste fits, like a stolen candy tucked high against my cheek, sweet when I least expect it.
Part 7. From Beyond Good and Evil, Fourth Part, Maxims and Interludes, by Friedrich Nietzsche.
I have done it, says my memory. I cannot have done it, says my pride, refusing to budge. In the end, my memory yields. Andrew. Drink this, Concise says, and he holds up a bottle of shampoo. I look at him as if he is crazy. No way, it'll make me sick. Well, sure it will, fool. Everyone wants to know where that bullet went. You ain't gonna wait for it to come out the other end. In the wake of the fight in the rec yard, Styx has been sent to the hospital for ophthalmological surgery, the blow dart embedded deep in his eye. He'll be sequestered for a disciplinary stint, but eventually he'll be back, and we will pick up where we left off. Taking the shampoo bottle out of Concise's hand, I swallow half the contents. A moment later, I charge for the toilet in the cell, bracing my hands on the bowl. No, it'll go down the sewer. Concise grabs my shoulders and pivots me so that I vomit into the stainless steel bowl of the sink. The bullet hits the drain with a ping.
That, Concise says, grinning, is for sheezy.
He reaches under the bunks and tosses me a towel. It is when I turn around to catch it that I notice Fetch lurking outside our cell. A gangly stick bug of a kid, with white pride tattoos curled around his biceps like asps. He's one of Styx's posse, and he's been watching every move we've made.
Yo, Cracker, Concise calls out. You want to squeal to Styx? We got a message for him.
He points his finger at Fetch, a makeshift gun.
Bang, he says.
In this jail, the whites control the inflow of hard drugs. And in our pod, the contact for goods is Styx. Concise and his hooch are small-time runners by comparison. The drugs get smuggled in off the streets. They're offered to the members of the Aryan Brotherhood upstairs in close custody first, then whites in general populations, and finally to other races. Money is exchanged by acquaintances on the outside. Any massive transfer of funds in jail accounts would immediately trigger suspicion from the DOs. Sticks, now wearing a patch over his left eye, has just come in from an AA meeting, a prime place to make deals. It has been 2 weeks since the incident in the rec yard, but that might as well be yesterday in jail. He walks toward my stool and kicks it. "You're in my way," he says. "I'm not in your way." Sticks shoves me 3 feet forward. "You're in my way," he repeats. Concise and Blue Lock are a sudden, implacable wall. They stand with their arms crossed, their muscles dark and flexed. Outnumbered, Sticks backs off. Concise and I walk up the stairs side by side. We don't speak until we have turned the corner on the landing. "What'd he say to you?" Concise asks. "Nothing." We both stop dead in the entryway to our cell. The entire space has been tossed. Towels flung into the toilet. Food stores emptied. Bottles of Concise's hooch opened and spilled in puddles across the floor. One of our mattresses has been ripped in half. Small tumbleweeds of yellowed foam are all over the floor. "Sticks and his Peckerwood buddies did this," Concise says. "You know what they were looking for," he adds. "And it isn't a question." For the first time that day, I stop doubting Concise, who has insisted that the bullet cannot be left hidden in our cell, who would not listen to my protest when I told him I absolutely, positively, was not going to do what he suggested I do. For the first time that day, I am fully aware of the small metal missile I pushed deep inside of me that morning. A suppository full of vengeance. To become a member of a prison gang, you might as well start in jail. Prospective members of the Aryan Brotherhood, the Mau Mau, and the Mexican Mafia, or EME, as they call themselves, are recommended by made members. A yes vote, taken among other members, lets you in on probation. Probates are subject to a background check. No crimes against children. No being a source for anyone in law enforcement. And you are given a sponsor, a member who takes you under his wing. For the Aryan Brotherhood, a probate has to prove himself for 2 years. You will be expected to keep weapons hidden with you. You will be asked to fight. You will be expected to ferry drugs from one place to another. If you have drug connections, you will be expected to supply the members. If you make money from any of this, you have to share it with everyone. At the end of 2 years, you will be assigned a hit, a murder sanctioned by the governing force of your gang. For the Aryan Brotherhood, that's three particular inmates in the special management unit of the Arizona State Prison. You will be given a weapon and told how to commit the murder. Your sponsor will come with you when it's time. After all, if there is an eyewitness to a murder you've committed, you most likely won't squeal. And since there was an eyewitness to a murder he committed, he isn't squealing either. It's one big pyramid scheme. Once you've done your job, you will be allowed to put on a wet patch, a tattoo, Gothic letters, AB, scraped into the skin of your arm or chest or neck or back. You must be in prison to be inked, so some time may pass between your hit and when you officially become a gang member. If a made member has the chance to take care of a sanctioned hit and misses the opportunity, it's a mistake punishable by death at the hands of his own kind. A few days later, we are in the pod watching the news when a local update comes on. At these, everyone perks up. If there's a report of crime, there's an excellent chance someone in the pod knows who committed it. Today, there is word of a raging fire in the Phoenix area. The reporter is a tiny woman with hair the same color as the flames. Police say a meth lab may be to blame for this morning's fatal fire, which destroyed a home in the North Phoenix area on Deer Valley Road last night. Firefighters were called in after an explosion took the life of Wilton Reynolds. At this hour, there was a mighty roar behind me and the sound of a garbage can being overturned. When I look over my shoulder, I see Concise standing over the mess. The DOs immediately rise to attention, so I turn to the control booth. "It was an accident," I say, riding the can. I grab Concise by the arm and pull him upstairs to our cell. "What are you doing?" He sits down. "Sinbad's my brother."
"Sinbad?
That homie they were talking about on the news." It takes me a moment to understand that Concise is referring to the victim in the fire.
"You mean the meth cook?" "He told me he knew what he was doing," Concise mutters. "You said you had two sisters." "He's my brother," Concise repeats, stressing the metaphor. "I grew up with him on the streets. This was going to be our big thing." "You were in business making meth? Do you have any idea what that drug does to people?" "We weren't giving it away," Concise snaps. "If someone was fool enough to mess himself up, that was his problem." I shake my head, disgusted. "If you build it, they will come." "If you build it," Concise says, "you cover your rent. If you build it, you pay off the loan sharks. If you build it, you put shoes on your kid's feet and food in his belly. And maybe even show up every now and then with a toy that every other goddamn kid in the school already has." He looks up at me. "If you build it, maybe your son don't have to, when he grow up." It is amazing, the secrets you can keep, even when you are living in close quarters. "You didn't tell me." Concise gets up and braces his hands against the upper bunk. "His mama OD'd. He lives with her sister, who can't always be bothered to take care of him. I try to send money so that I know he's eating breakfast and getting school lunch tickets. I got a little bank account for him, too. Just in case he don't want to be part of a street gang, you know? Just in case he want to be an astronaut or a football player or something." He digs out a small notebook from his bunk. "I'm writing him. A diary-like. So we know who his daddy is by the time he learned to read." It is always easier to judge someone than to figure out what might have pushed him to the point where he might do something illegal or morally reprehensible, because he honestly believes he'll be better off. The police will dismiss Wilton Reynolds as a drug dealer and celebrate one more criminal permanently removed from society. A middle-class father who meets Concise on the street, with his tough talk and his shaved head, will steer clear of him, never guessing that he, too, has a little boy waiting for him at home. The people who read about me in the paper. I run my hands over my scalp. Fuck you, I am the worst sort of nightmare. I run my hands over my scalp. Fuzzy. Now that the hair is growing in.
What?
Phosgene gas, I tell.
What?
That's what killed your friend. The chemical reaction necessary to make meth produces a lethal gas. If you disconnect your tubes the wrong way, you die.
Concise blinks at me. You a meth cook, too?
No, but I've got advanced degrees in chemistry. I sit down and motion for the notebook Concise is still holding. I rip a page out of the back and then rummage underneath my pillow for a pencil. Sharp enough, it makes a good weapon to sleep with in your hand. It takes me a few minutes and several corrections, but when I have the reactions down right, I hand the recipe to Concise.
Find another friend. This'll work.
No way. You ain't getting involved.
This ain't who you are.
He crumples up the paper and tosses it on the floor of the cell. Who I am and what I am capable of doing has always managed to surprise me. I think about the day I ran away with you, how I took you to a diner and let you order every single dessert on the menu so that you would think the best of me before you could begin to think the worst. I reach for the paper. Your son, I say. What's his name? The first thing you need to make meth is a lot of friends, because drugstores limit the number of cold tablets a single person can buy at once. They come in boxes of 24, and you need thousands to get the right amount of pseudoephedrine. You also need rubber tubing and faucet coupling, acetone, and alcohol. Muriatic acid, cat litter, and duct tape. Iodine crystals and flasks and beakers. Red phosphorus, the stuff on the heads of matches, but in far greater supply. You'll need coffee filters and funnels and lye and cleaning gloves. You'll need a Pyrex pie plate and canning jars with lids. Grind the pills into powder in a blender. Put this into a canning jar. Fill with alcohol, cover, and shake until it settles. Filter this through more alcohol, several times. Pour the liquid into pie plates and microwave until the liquid evaporates. Crush the powder as fine as you can. Rinse with acetone and set the residue into another plate. Break it apart and let it dry. In the meantime, set up your glassware.
This ends Disc 10, Vanishing Acts, Disc 11.
I have been in jail for 25 days when I am given a nickname by the blacks. The Chemist. I learn a new vocabulary. Glass is meth that's been washed in acetone and has very few impurities, therefore costing more. A teener is a 16th of an ounce. An 8-ball is an 1/8 of an ounce. A quarter of a gram, that is the usual injected dose and goes for $25 on the streets. A dime bag is $10 worth. Tweaking is being high on meth. To be spun is to be tweaking for too long. Sketching is the state between these two. I try not to think about the actual drug transactions, about the strangers I am harming. But there is a part of me that knows they are the price I am paying for my safety in this jail and the protection of the blacks. There is a part of me that whispers, "I told you so. You ruined one life.
What made you think you wouldn't ruin 100 more?
An army of spies on the outside become the arms and legs of the operation. They buy the supplies, make the meth, and set up bank accounts for Concise and me.
I didn't want any profits.
But Concise was adamant. If I was taking the risk, I was taking the rewards too. And so I conceded. I imagine using the funds to keep kids like Concise's son off the streets. A senior center, maybe, but for the younger, more desperate set. It brings me right back to the question I've been circling since I got here. Once you make a mistake, can any amount of compensation erase it? Concise locates diabetics in different pods who can steal syringes from the outpatient clinic, where they go for their insulin shots. Most users prefer to shoot up, which is why the needles are in high demand. But meth can also be smoked, snorted, or mixed with coffee or juice. He has a full list of customers before the first batch is even ready. On the day the jury selection begins for my trial, I'm given a suit and blue shirt. I don't recognize it, and I find myself stroking the fabric and wondering if you picked it out on my behalf. I am so overwhelmed by the thought of putting on something, anything, other than stripes, that I don't realize at first how upset Concise is. Chicken neck Mike ain't gonna be in place for the drop-off, he says. He hands me a letter from an inmate in a different pod. Since prisoners aren't allowed to communicate with each other, it's been kited. Someone on the outside has received the note from Mike and mailed it back to Concise. According to the note, Mike is supposed to smuggle in the first shipment of meth today when he goes to the courthouse for sentencing. But his attorney rescheduled the date, and therefore Chicken Neck Mike will miss the transfer. Well, I say after a moment, I'm going to be there. Inmates are shackled together for the transfer to the courthouse. We carry our alter egos under our arms, jeans and muscle tees, button-down shirts, a suit. At the courthouse, the chains are unlocked, and we are allowed to change. Eric has forgotten to bring me socks, so I slide my bare feet into my loafers. We are led en masse to the courtroom and seated in the jury box together. One by one, we'll be called to a table beside our attorneys. Eric isn't here yet, and I'm grateful. I would not want him to see what I am about to do. There is no difference, of course, between providing the recipe that launches thousands of grams of methamphetamine or being the physical link that transports it back to the jail. You are implicated by your actions either way. But in some corner of my mind, being an active participant in smuggling drugs is more shameful. Concise has told me that Blue Lock's girlfriend will pass me what I need to bring back. You just sit there, Concise said to me, and let the stuff come to you. For nearly a half hour, I wait in the jury box, watching lawyers filter into the courtroom and talk to each other, or read through their motions. The judge is nowhere in sight. I admire the soaring ceiling, the span between walls, architecture that I've forgotten. A young woman hurries down the center aisle and corrals a deputy. She is wearing a pinstripe suit that clings to the curves of her waist and hips, and sensible black heels. Her corn-rowed hair has been twisted into a neat knot, and her skin is the color of maple syrup.
Yes, I'm a paralegal for Eric Talcott, I hear her say, and she points right at me. He needs his client to review a motion for today's appearance. If I could just... She smiles into his eyes. A moment later, she comes toward me. Mr. Talcott wanted you to take a look at this, she says. And she leans over the divider of the jury box with a manila folder. There is absolutely nothing written on the papers in the file. She points to them and whispers, "Nod." I do. And a tiny knotted balloon slides out of the crease of the folder to drop softly between my feet. She snaps her folder shut and makes her way out of the courtroom. I try to imagine her with Blue Lock when he is not Blue Lock, but just some guy living with a girl downtown. Then I bend down and tuck the balloon into my fist, slip it into the waistband of my pants. Eric arrives a few minutes later and asks the deputy's permission to approach me, too. By now, I'm sweating so hard there are stains beneath my arms. I feel like I'm on the verge of passing out. "You okay?" he asks. "Great. Fine." He gives me a funny look. What the hell was that deputy talking about? Some paralegal wanted to see you? It was a mistake. She was looking for a different guy named Hopkins. Eric shrugs. Whatever. Look, what's going to happen today? Eric, I interrupt. Is there any chance you can get me out to use the bathroom? He glances at me, then at the deputy. Let me see. Apparently, I'm enough of a physical wreck to merit a special break. Because a different deputy is summoned to escort me to the restroom. He stands outside the stall and whistles while I drop my pants. From behind my ear, I take the dollop of ointment Concise gave me that morning for this purpose. A keep-on person medication for skin lesions. Grimacing, I wipe the salve over the little white balloon until it is lubricated enough to be pushed into my rectum. 10 minutes later, I take my seat at the defense table beside Eric. I keep my eyes on the parade of potential jurors who walk through the courtroom doors. I scrutinize the woman with acne, the man who keeps checking his watch, the freckled girl who looks just as frightened to be here as I am. They take the jury surveys that Eric hands out. Some of them glance at me with narrowed eyes. Others purposely keep their expressions blank. I wish I could speak to them. I would tell them that they couldn't possibly judge me any more harshly than I've judged myself. I would tell them that when you look at a person, you never know what they're hiding. Wear gloves.
Run water through your Allen condenser. Very quickly add your red phosphorus, using a coat hanger to unclog it if you have to. It's the exothermic reaction you're looking for, and it will be immediate. Quickly plug the top that leads to your vinyl tubing and tape the connection. When yellow fumes rise from the mixture, shake the condenser. If the pressure gets too high, put the flask into an ice bath until it slows down. Eventually, the mixture will swell up, like a mousse, and then recede. At some point, the cat litter in the milk jug at the other end of your setup will turn hot and purple.
Disconnect the rubber tubing from the Allen condenser.
Cut the vinyl tubing off as close to the milk jug as you can. Cover immediately with duct tape. Be careful. Do not untape. Inside is the phosgene gas that killed your friend. Twitch is a 22-year-old who looks 50. He hangs out in the corners of the rec yard, peeling scabs that fester between his fingers and toes, and sniffing at the blood that wells up and still reeks of the meth that runs through his system. When he smiles at you, which isn't often, you can see the black holes where he's lost teeth and the plush white carpet of his tongue. Most of the time he is spun out, too high on meth to sleep, and subject to hallucinations. He's not a violent addict, but a paranoid one. And recently, he's become certain that the DOs are body snatchers. He plucks at my shirt as I walk by him. "How much longer?" he whispers. He is talking about our supply. That initial balloon I smuggled in from the court was given to the Mau Mau upstairs in close custody, the black prison gang members. Having given his tithe, Concise has opened the proverbial door for business. Our first in-house batch arrived in a Bible. The same girl who'd played paralegal at court for me brought a leather-bound edition to the minister who leads the Baptist services here. She cried as she explained how her boyfriend, Concise this particular day, had found Jesus and how she'd inscribed a Bible specially for him, only to be told by the detention officers that inmates were only allowed books arriving directly from Amazon.com. Was there any possible way that the minister might be able to get this gift to her boyfriend? What self-respecting minister would ever turn down a request like that? When Concise received the Bible during his next appearance at services, he thanked the minister profusely, and then came back to the cell and thanked God. Hidden in the spine, under carefully re-glued leather, was an ounce of meth to be sold. That ounce, which would net $1,000 on the streets, was worth $400 a gram in prison, or, as Concise figured, $11,200. Twitch grabs my sleeve again, and I shake him off. "I told you, I'm not the one who makes the deals." I turn away just in time to witness a transaction going down between Concise and Flaco, one of the Mexican nationals. "It's $150," Concise says. Flaco's eyes darken. "You sold Tasty Freak the same quarter gram for a C-note," Concise shrugs. "Tasty Freak ain't no spick." Flaco agrees to the price and leaves. He will be given his prize after Concise receives word of a money transfer from his friends outside. "You taxed him," I say, walking up to Concise. Isn't it? I'm about to say wrong, but realize what a stupid distinction it is. "Why?" I ask. "Because he's Mexican?" "Now that would be just plain racist of me," Concise says, and he grins. "It's because he ain't black." From a rec yard rap. "Sitting in a four-corner cell block, my weapon is a shank, not a Glock. Early in the morning, the cells pop. Off to the chow hall is our next stop. Eating cold-ass eggs, that's what it was. See my homeboy coast. What up, cuz? Mobbing the yard, our car is deep. We always strapped and ready to creep. Hit the iron pile, getting swole to the hub, ready to war with any scrub.
My big bro Snoop gave us word. Shit's gonna jump is what he heard. So post up and get ready to stick any motherfucker that tries something slick. The handball court was the spot to run steel, and a fool was my plot. Me and this fool on the killing field, I shanked him in the neck, it got real. When his punk ass gasped, I hit him again, ran my shank right under his chin. I left the punk dead in his tracks, 187, tat on my back. In this cell, I'm left to rot, doing life on a murder plot. I don't care, I'll do it again, doing 25 to life in the state pen.
The diabetic, who has been providing Concise with needles, also gets him an asthma inhaler, traded from an emphysemic inmate. At night, after lights out, he scrapes the head and foot off the thin tin canister, fashioning a hollow tube. He carefully pries the cylinder open by applying pressure with a toothbrush until it is a flat piece of metal ready for shaping. It will become a zip gun, a deadly chamber for the bullet we're still hiding. When I am out of the cell, I make sure Concise will be present to stand guard over our treasure. If he's going to be gone too, one of us hides it on our bodies. We treat this tiny missile of gunpowder with the care and reverence a new parent would give an infant. Tonight, Concise is working on his weapon harder than usual. "Do you ever think about what you'll do on the outside?" I ask quietly. "No." His flat denial surprises me. "There's got to be something you'd like to do." "The world ain't no Hallmark commercial, chemist," Concise says. "Most of us are just doing life on the installment plan. You could move away with your son, find a job somewhere." "Doing what?" Concise asks. "You think people go out of their way to hire brothers with a prison record?" He shakes his head. "Whether or not you get inked in here, you leave with a tattoo." "I'd like to think that we can be 100 different people in one lifetime. But maybe Concise is on to something. Maybe once you change, there's a piece that stays that way forever. Until, eventually, you cannot remember who you were in the first place." Concise rubs the edge of the zip gun more furiously along the cement. "What's the rush?" I ask. Rumors about an upcoming race riot spread like smoke. Usually they are so thick in the cells you can barely breathe for all the guarded anticipation. But I've heard nothing. In fact, Stick spent most of the afternoon in his cell brooding. "The white boys just lost their supplier," Concise says. "He got beat to death on the outside. Stick's got to find himself some drugs, or he ain't going to get his patch." For all that Stick controls the whites in our pod, he is still taking orders from someone upstairs in close custody. Someone who will expect him to find a new source. "He's going to come to us?" If Concise taxes the Mexicans, I can only imagine what fine he'll impose on the whites. "He gonna come," Concise confirms. "But that don't mean we gotta sell it to him."
Once you have filtered out your solids, add naphtha to the jar.
When the mixture separates, add lye. Stir so that it doesn't boil over. Pour the contents into a coffee maker pot. When the mixture separates again, pour the top layer into the liter bottle with a sports top. Shake hard for 5 minutes. When the liquid settles, invert the bottle and pour the bottom layer onto a pie plate. A pH strip dipped into the contents should turn red. microwave the pie plate until the water evaporates off. The crystals left behind are the finished product. There are certain corners of hallways in this jail where the surveillance cameras don't spy. One stretch is where church and AA meetings are held. Another is leading out to the infirmary. These are the spots for a well-placed elbow to the kidney or a slip of a shank. Whether or not you intend to do so, you speed up as you round the turns. I am just returning from the GED course meeting. My PhD in chemistry seems insignificant when compared to an entire hour outside bars. When I feel a hand grab me and push me against the wall. A toothbrush, its handle scraped sharp as a knife, is held to the skin of my throat. I assume it is Styx. So when I hear instead a Mexican accent, I'm almost relieved.
"Tell them Ayate, we don't want to pay extra," Flaco says.
I can smell the sour stink of urine, and I realize it's mine. He lets go of me. I fall onto my hands and knees.
"And if you don't listen, gringo," he threatens, "I know a nice detention officer who will."
When I get back to the cell, Concise is going through his mail. A packet from his lawyer's return address, a forgery, contains a legal pad full of notes. Concise has pulled back the gummy red fixative at the top of the pad to reveal a tiny square cut through the layers of pages, making a little pocket for contraband. Inside is a tiny plastic bag, no bigger than a tooth, filled with our second batch of meth. As I enter the cell, he sniffs and makes a face. "What happened to you?" "Flaco would like you to reconsider taxing Mexicans." I turn away from him, strip, pull on my spare pair of stripes and wad the soiled ones into a ball. "Flaco's a fool. He's on the fence with the Chicanos anyway. He screwed up his first assigned hit for the EMEs." I sink down onto the lower bunk. "Concise, he's threatening to tell the DOs." Concise walks toward me and reaches out one finger. He touches it to the spot on my neck where Flaco had held his shank. I brush my fingers across the skin, and they come away bloody. "It's nothing." Concise's nostrils flare, a bellows.
"It ain't nothing."
He flattens his palms across the globe of his shaved head. Palpable thought.
"You're out."
"Out of what?"
"The game, the business, the whole thing."
Astounded, I just stare at him for a second.
"You a liability, man. You got too many enemies in here. Because you white, but you don't act white. I can't take that kind of risk."
He begins to reseal the razor pocket in the legal pad.
"I'll buy you out, fair and square."
When you are in jail, trust becomes a commodity more rare than gold. How can you believe someone who has built a life out of lying? How can you close your eyes at night, knowing your cellmate has been arrested for murder? The answer is, because you have to. The alternative, being a loner, is not really an alternative at all. You have to mesh into a group to survive, even if you are surrounded by people who have cheated and stolen their way into position beside you. You have to find someone worthy of watching your back, even if making that pact means admitting that you are just as flawed as everyone else here. Having Concise and the African Americans in the pod standing up for me has afforded me a freedom from Styx and his cronies. But more than that, it's given me something I haven't had for years. A sense of belonging. When you spend your life running by design, you may get far, but you rarely let yourself get close to anyone. I've had you, all I've ever wanted, but it has come at a price. I left the only woman I've ever loved. I never whiled away the hours with a fishing buddy. I kept chatty co-workers at a careful distance. When you let people into the inner sanctum of your life, you risk having them see the heart of you, and I couldn't chance that. In an odd, amazing way. Concise is the first friend I've had in nearly 30 years. It doesn't matter that he's a drug dealer. It doesn't matter that he is black. It doesn't matter that he's offering me an honorable discharge from an operation I never felt comfortable with in the first place. All I know is that a minute ago, it was us against them. And now it is not. You can't do this, I say, my whole body starting to shake. I do whatever I want. Concise snaps over his shoulder. Go on, get lost. You're supposed to be good at that. I'm off the bunk and on top of him before he can even finish his sentence. He is, in that instant, Styx and Flacco and Elephant Mike and every faceless man and woman out there in the world who has passed judgment on me without hearing all the facts. He's younger and stronger, but I've come from behind to surprise him. I am able to knock him to the ground and pin him with my weight. You fool! You know what happened if the DOs find out you selling? Concise grunts. It's a criminal investigation. It's time on top of the time you're already gonna do. That is when I understand. Concise doesn't want to end this alliance between us. He wants to protect it. He is trying to save me before I can be implicated along with him. At the altercation, a small crowd is gathered round the front of our cell. Blue Lock, poised to jump in and pull me off Concise. A small knot of white pride boys who are cheering me on. And Styx, who stands with his arms crossed, an inscrutable expression on his face. One of the detention officers pushes through. What's going on? I relax my hold on Concise. We're good. The DO's eyes hone in on the cut on my neck, still bleeding. Cut myself shaving, I say. The guard doesn't buy a word of it. But the spark that could ignite the pod has dissipated. He's done all he needs to. As he pushes at the other inmates, getting them to disperse, Concise gets to his feet and shakes his clothes straight. I helped get you into this, I tell him. I'm not leaving now. The next day is my last day for jury selection, and Concise's first day of trial. We are both headed over to the courthouse at the same time. Bet you got yourself a Brooks Brothers button-down shirt, Concise says. As a matter of fact, I do. What about it? He grins. Chemist, Brooks wasn't no brother. I suppose you think I ought to go to court wearing pinstripes and spats? Only if you're Al Capone. Our conversation is interrupted as Twitch flings himself into our cell. I ain't conducting business now, Concise says tersely. The addict's eyes dart wildly.
I'm doing you a favor, man, he says. Thought maybe you'd do me one, too.
What he means is that in return for whatever information he thinks he can provide, we might give him a free teener. Concise folds his arms.
I'm listening. I heard one of the DOs talking when I was up in the infirmary this morning. They're using the boss chair, Twitch says.
Why should I believe you?
Twitch shrugs. I'm not the one with a bullet up my ass. If I come back from court and what you said is true, Concise says, I'll give you what you want.
At the promise of another hit, Twitch nearly floats out of the cell.
Concise turns to me. We gotta hide the bullet in here. I look at him like he's crazy.
If we're both leaving the cell, and there's no one to watch over the prized possession, then our modus operandi is to take it with us.
If Twitch ain't bullshitting, then today we ain't just gonna get strip search. They're gonna sit us down on a metal detector chair, too.
Concise wriggles under the bottom bunk and starts to scrape the cement between the bricks. A few minutes of digging creates a hole deep enough to house the 22. He backs out from under the bed and starts rummaging through his personal items for toothpaste and Metamucil. He mixes these together in the sink, scoops it into his palm.
Keep an eye out, he says.
And he creeps under the bunk again, this time to grout. Concise and I are handcuffed together for the trip back from the courthouse to the jail. He is quieter than usual, almost haunted. The sad fact about being in jail is that no matter how bad you think it is there, the reality of what you face in court is worse. I'm only beginning to taste that bitter future. Concise has swallowed it whole today.
So, I say, trying to lift his spirits. You going to pull an OJ?
He glances over his shoulder.
Oh, yeah. I got the meeting out of my hand, man.
But can you get a bloody glove over it? Concise laughs. We are buzzed in through the level slider and strip searched once again before being allowed back into our pod. I follow him upstairs to our cell and fall onto the lower bunk. Distantly, I am aware of one of the DOs beginning his security walk. Late afternoon, the general noise level is at a high hum. Guys hollering to each other across the common room, or slamming a hand of cards down on a metal tabletop when they get gin, televisions blaring, toilets flushing, showers running. Concise sinks down onto the stool, his hands between his knees.
My lawyer says I'm looking at 10 years, he says after a moment. By the time I get out, my boy's gonna be as old as I was when I got jumped into the Crips.
There's nothing to say. We both know that no matter how we try to convince ourselves, we'll outrun our past. It always crosses the finish line first.
Hey, he says, do us a favor and check the goddamn bricks.
I get down on my hands and knees and start to crawl under the lower bunk. But I can smell it before I can even see the telltale hole. The pungent mint, the ground powder that dusts the cement floor. Then there is a shot. It is louder than you think. It echoes against the walls and leaves me deaf. I shimmy out from underneath the bunk and catch Concise as he falls off the stool. His eyes roll back. His blood soaks me.
Who did this?
I scream into the crowd that has already gathered. I try to find the shooter, but all I see are stripes. Concise falls on top of me in a heavy tangle of limbs in desperation. What is black and white and red all over? I think. A joke Sophie once told me. I cannot remember her punchline, but I know a different one. A black man dying in jail. A white one watching him go. I hear the crackle of a radio, and the jail comes alive with a web of response. Officer needs assistance in 3-2-B pod. Man down. All officers on levels 2 and 3 respond to 3-2-B pod. David 2, did you copy? David 2 copies, 1017. Inmates in B pod, locked down. Steel scrapes as the cell doors are shut. I'm dragged away from Concise. Someone is asking me if I'm hurt and looking at my arms and chest. Places where I'm covered in Concise's blood. I am handcuffed behind my back and led to the ghost town of the East Day Room. In the middle of all this, no one has bothered to turn off the television. Emerald's bursts of instruction are interrupted by the RN shouting to call 911. By a deep voice saying, "More pressure." By the jangling arrival of the Phoenix Fire Department paramedics. "This is hot, hot, hot," Emerald says. They will take Concise to Good Samaritan Hospital, the closest trauma center. "Hey," I yell out, as he is carried past on a stretcher. "Is he going to be okay?"
"He's dead," a voice replies. "But then, you already knew that, didn't you?"
When I look up, I see a tall, well-dressed black man with a detective's badge clipped to his belt. He stares at my uniform covered with Concise's blood. And I realize that, like every other black man in the Madison Street jail, he believes I am a killer. The homicide division offices at the General Investigation Division are near 35th and Durango. I'm kept waiting while the detectives systematically interrogate everyone else in the pod. From the officers in the blacks who say that just days ago Concise and I were fighting, to Fetch, the young white boy who watched me vomit out the bullet after the rec yard fight. Whoever did this knows that no one will believe a white man and a black man in jail might forge a friendship. Whoever did this knows that the blacks will assume I was the one who killed Concise. After all, everyone knows it is my bullet that went into him. The whites, for once, will agree with them. Whoever did this was trying to punish both of us. Detective Rydell has hooked me up to a CVSA, a voice stress analyzer. It's like a polygraph, only more accurate. It doesn't measure physiological reactions due to stress, but instead micro tremors in a voice frequency range that the human ear can't hear. Micro tremors are only present when a person isn't telling the truth. Or so the detective tells me. "I took a shower that morning," I say. "I knew I was going to court."
"What time was that?"
"I don't know. Maybe 8 o'clock. I do not tell him about Twitch and the boss chair and about the way Concise and I carved a hole in the brickwork for our bullet. Then I read until it was time to leave the pod.
"What did you read?"
"A novel. Something from the jail library.
Baldacci.
Rydell folds his arms. You did nothing between approximately 8:15 a.m. and 11? I might have gone to the bathroom. He stares me down. Piss or shit? I rub a hand down my face. Can you tell me why the answer to that is going to help you figure out who killed Concise? Rydell exhales heavily. Look, Andrew. You got to see this from my point of view. You're an educated man, 30 years the victim senior. You aren't a career criminal. Yet you're telling me that you bonded with this guy, that you actually found something you had in common. I think about Concise talking about his little boy. Yes. There is a moment of silence. Andrew, Rydell says, help me to help you. How can we prove you didn't kill?